Welcome to Odeshi the Bulletproof Entrepreneur Podcast, the first episode of 2015. Happy New Year, everybody.
If you're ready to take your destiny into your own hands, you've come to the right place. This is Odeshi, the Bulletproof Entrepreneur, featuring interviews with the most exciting and amazing entrepreneurs across Africa. Here's your host, Chi Odogu.
Hi everyone, Happy New Year. Welcome to the first show of 2015. I just want to say a quick shout out to two technology blogs, that's Tech360NG and Enterprise54. They were so kind enough to give us some press mention at the beginning of the year on the 1st and on the 5th of January 2015. So I just want to say a big shout out to those guys for featuring us in their publication. It's been a pleasure working on this podcast, interviewing the guests, and interacting with you guys, the listeners. So I just want to say thank you guys for all the support you've given us over the past year. And also, we're looking forward to bringing you some more actionable and awesome content this year. Just don't worry about it. It's going to be super, 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 super amazing. Yeah, sorry I'm talking a little bit low. I have a bit of a sore throat, so my voice is not where it's supposed to be. But yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I give this recording and push the show out there today. Now, we're talking to Cecilia Ostman today. She's an entrepreneur based out of Nairobi, Kenya, and she's one of the co-founders of the brand Njema Helena, which is a fashion house out of Nairobi, Kenya, as I said earlier. And their products are sold in the United States, in Europe, and in Kenya. So before we get into the meat and the potatoes of the interview, let's take a quick word from our friends and then we'll dive right into the show. And please, if you love what we're doing here, please don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, tweet your favorite parts of the show, any quotes that you like. You can also listen to the interviews on YouTube. And before I forget, we're actually now syndicated on Vibeo.com. That's Vibeo.com. That's an awesome audio on demand platform based out of Lagos, Nigeria, doing awesome stuff with audio content and podcasting. So check us out on Vibeo.com. That's Vibeo.com. And now let's get on with the rest of the show.
Now close your eyes and repeat after me. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. But guess what, guys? You can still find a home away from home if you go to Jovega.com. Jovega.com is a leading hotel booking platform with over 5,000 hotels across Nigeria. So, whether you're visiting friends or attending a special event, you can be rest assured knowing that you'll find a nice place to get a good night's rest. Go to Jovega.com. That's Jovago.com for more details.
Hi guys, good morning. Welcome to the show. Today's guest is Cecilia Ostman. She's one of the co-founders of Njema Helena, an international fashion brand based out of Nairobi, Kenya, that has been operating for over 2 years. They make distinctly African clothing and material and sell them internationally. So Cecilia and her sister and her mother co-founded the business a couple years ago, and they've been featured in several international publications and magazines, including websites such as L.co.za. Cecilia worked with the Ralph Lauren company before she started as business, and she's here to tell us a little bit about herself and her company. Welcome to the show, Cecilia.
Thank you, and thank you for the nice introduction.
You're welcome. So could you please tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in the fashion industry?
Sure. I went to University of New York. I went to FIT, and I majored in fashion design. My specialization was women's wear. After I finished my degree there, I stayed on. I lived and worked in New York for about 5 years, and I designed sleepwear for, as you said, for Ralph Lauren brand. But I left my job in New York when my sister was ill. I came to Europe to be with her, and in the aftermath of her death, our lives were kind of turned upside down. So my mother and I, together with my sister, we decided to turn that into an opportunity, and we started our own business.
And I'm sorry to hear about your sister. Could you please tell us a little bit more about her and what her vision was before you guys decided to go into the fashion business full time?
Yeah, my sister was living and working in Kenya for the European Commission.
Okay.
And she didn't really enjoy her work. Her dream was really to have a family business where she could, you know, work with us. We could all live together and we could do something together. And I don't think she specifically had an idea what that family business would be. It was just this idea that we would work together for something.
Okay.
And after she passed away, she got cancer while she was living and working in Kenya. And she came to Europe for her treatment. But after she passed away, we were sitting around and we were thinking about this dream that she had, that we would all go to Kenya and work together. And so in a way, it was her idea. So that's why we've named it in her memory.
Okay. And were all of you in the fashion industry?
No, just you? So my sister, what she does for us and what she helps out with is all our social media, and she builds the website. She has a master's degree in journalism. She works in communications. And my mother is by trade really a journalist, but she's had to learn really fast what everything we do. I kind of, I hold the reins and I instruct her, and she just works really hard.
Oh, okay. And you're the designer and the creative artist behind the brand, right?
Yes. So I design everything, and I train our tailors, and I make all our original samples, and I make all our patterns.
So you guys decided to launch this business in the memory of your sister. And why did you pick Kenya to do that?
It just kind of felt like a natural choice. We lived there for a few years while we were growing up. And as I said, my sister was living and working there.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of friends there. My father is now retired and living in Kenya.
Okay. Sounds like quite an international family.
Yeah.
So... could you tell us a little bit about what brought you guys to Kenya from your home country of Sweden?
It was from my father's work when we were growing up. My father worked for the Swedish Foreign Aid Service, so he was posted out in Kenya.
Okay. So now you start this company, and that's in 2012, I believe, correct? Pardon me?
Yes, we started working on it early 2012, and we had our launch in October 2012.
Okay, so tell us about that. What was the steps you took to work on the business and then launch the business?
It still feels like a kind of like a work in progress. We started very, very small. It was just me and my mother. Okay. We said, okay, let's book tickets. We'll go out to Nairobi and we'll figure things out as we go. So that's what we did. We went out to Nairobi. We stayed with a good friend who's very generous and let us stay with her. And we started basically, you know, from nothing. We found first one tailor. And we sat in the servants' quarters of our friend's house, and then we found one more tailor. And from there, we just kind of started building a brand, building dresses, making up logos, and stocking up. And then we decided to have a big launch event. And we just went from there.
Okay. So let's break this down a little bit further. You found one tailor and then another tailor. So what exactly happened? You started sketching out the designs and the patterns, and then the tailors would make it, or you'd sew it and show them what to do?
Yeah. So in the beginning, I was making everything myself. But then obviously we needed, proper production so that we had enough stock to sell. But I would make all the original patterns, all the original samples. And then, you know, as we went along, we would get tailors to come in and produce and sew for us. But even now, when we're busy, I help out and I'm in the workshop with them, making samples, doing alterations, whatever I need to do.
Oh, okay. Okay, so your launch in late 2012, talk a little bit about that. What were the processes and the events you implemented to launch the company?
Mostly what we do and what we still focus on is we really focus on our product. We don't really do that much advertising or promotion. It's a lot of just word of mouth and friends of friends. So we really, what we try to do is make sure we have really good product. And so we had for our launch, we had several styles of dresses, a few separates. We had some belts and some necklaces. And we just invited everyone we knew. And we had quite a good turnout. We just had a day of a pop-up shop. We had a cocktail party. And mostly we were just excited to see how the dresses would fit on all the different sizes and how people were going to respond to the product.
Okay. So the pop-up shop, for example, were you guys just running that only in Kenya, or you travel internationally to do that also?
Since then, if we have done it also internationally?
No, the pop-up shop, initially when you first started, was it just primarily in Kenya? You were trying to get customers for the product?
Yeah, we just launched in Nairobi.
Okay. And then what happened? How did you get international recognition for your brand? Because I see that it's sold in the U.S. and in Europe.
Yeah,
a lot of online channels.
Yeah, a lot of these retailers will somehow, I'm not really sure how they'll find us. They'll find us on Instagram or on Pinterest, on Facebook, and they contact us. So I think maybe only one or two of those, the stockists we have, we've actually contacted and asked them if they would be interested. All the other ones, they have somehow found us, emailed us, and asked to put in an order.
Okay. And do you have any current partnerships with any of the distributors, for example?
Partnerships, no.
Okay. So basically, you're just operating out of Kenya, and these brands are finding you through social media and wanting to stock your stuff.
Basically, yes. We also do a lot of our own kind of pop-up shops and trunk shows and stuff like that.
Okay. And do you have a retail store in Kenya?
No. I mean, we stock with other boutiques, and then we have a showroom where you can come by appointment, which is at the house where we have the workshop and everything.
Okay. And now you're... Okay, so you stock with other boutiques, but you're an indigenous Kenyan brand, and you're obviously competing with several foreign brands like, you know, the DKNYs and whatever. So how were you able to position your company and your products in order to favorably compete with the foreign brands?
A lot of our stockists, they have kind of a niche business where they try to bring African-inspired and African-made product to wherever they are, like in Canada and the U.S. And so I think a lot of them find us because they are out, you know, looking for African-inspired products. And then they find us. I think mainly the reason we compete, or we have the confidence to kind of compete in international markets, because we have a very high-quality product. We work really hard to make our product a good product.
So could you tell us a little bit about your inspiration?
The process is basically we source fabrics, and we go out in the Kenyan and the local market, and we just try to find really, you know, bright color, beautiful fabrics. Because I've always loved the traditional kitenge, the African fabric. So we try to find as many beautiful fabrics as we can. And from there, we really just try to make really well-tailored, beautiful dresses that women will feel good wearing. It's not necessarily a design process where I try to think of a theme or anything complicated. It's really just about making dresses that, regardless of what fabric we put them in, they'll be really beautiful clothes.
Okay, that's great. And so in the 2 years of running the company, how has your business grown? Could you tell us a little bit about the business itself?
So when we first started 2 years ago, we started very small. It was me and my mother, our two tailors, and a friend's servants' quarters. Now we rent a house where we have a showroom. We have a room for our staff. We have one more staff now. We have three full-time staff. We also outsource to factories. In the past, we've outsourced to a factory in Nairobi. We're now trying to outsource to a factory in Mauritius. We are currently stocked in three different places in Nairobi, and we're stocked in eight other countries around the world.
And what are those eight countries where your products are being sold again?
We're stocked in the UK. There's a shop in Canada, a couple of shops in the States. There's a shop in Sweden that stocks us. In Italy, obviously we're in Kenya, and we've just gotten an order from Australia. Am I forgetting? Oh, in South Africa.
Oh, wow. So it's basically a completely international brand, essentially. You hit kind of all the major markets. Are you expanding into other African markets? I know you're in South Africa and Kenya, but have you looked at, take for example, West Africa or Northern Africa as a potential market?
Yeah, we don't spend that much time looking into markets. It kind of happens that they come to us, but we would be more than happy to expand to other African markets. I think it would be really, a really good place for us.
Outsourced factories, for example. Could you talk a little bit about the process?
To outsource to factories?
Yes.
So in the past, we've worked with a factory in Nairobi who do a little bit larger scale production than what we can do in our own workshop. So what we do in those cases is we provide patterns and for all the sizes, and we provide a sample, which exactly what it should look like. We provide the fabric, and they cut it, and they sew it for us, and then we pay a per piece price.
Okay. And is that more economically convenient for you as opposed to scaling up internally versus outsourcing to the production line to the third party?
It's mainly just, you know, what would be practical. In order for us to expand, we would have to expand our facilities. We couldn't fit any more staff where we're currently based. Okay. So if we were to expand our facilities, we would have to expand our overhead costs. And so that wouldn't necessarily be practical. And then we would have to count on having a steady flow of higher production, which we don't really know if we can. But if we outsource, we can do it sporadically. We can do it when we need it.
Okay. And was it a conscious decision to keep production and manufacturing in Africa versus sending it out to somewhere like China, for example?
Yeah, I think it's important to our brand to be based in Africa. It's important to support the Invest in Africa ethos. I think Africa has a lot to offer, and there are a lot of resources in Africa. And so I think, yeah, it's very important for us that we stay within Africa and invest there. Unfortunately, we don't have right now a factory that we're working with in Nairobi. We're also trying in Mauritius. But we'll never go to China or anywhere outside Africa.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about your experiences at the Africa Fashion Week in London.
Yeah, so for the first time, we did Africa Fashion Week London this past August. Yeah. And we'd never been to the event. We'd never, you know, participated in it. So we just kind of signed up and we said, okay, let's see what happens. And it was really good for us. The fashion shows are really high production. They looked really good. So we were very excited to be in the show. We got some very nice, you know, photos. We got some quite good press from the fashion show. And we, you know, we also had at the event, we had a stand where we were selling. We were a bit worried that we wouldn't sell that well because a lot of people come for these kind of things. They come just to see the show and they're not really prepared to shop and try clothes on. And, you know, but it always happens like this. After we have the show and people see it on the runway or they see it on, then all of a sudden they come running and they want to start shopping.
So after the show, tell us, what would a typical buyer want to buy?
We had that day, most of our customers were buying trousers because we had a skinny fit tight leg trouser in the kitenge fabric. So all of a sudden everyone was buying those. And we also had those at a really good price. And then the second best item, we were selling shorts. We do a tailored pair of shorts in the same fabric that sold really well.
Okay, good. Why your products are priced at a certain price point and who your typical customer is?
We're trying to really make a brand for, you know, everyday kind of people. We don't want to make it exclusive or anything that would be too expensive for, you know, for your mother or for your sister or your friend to recommend for them to buy. We really want it to be kind of approachable and affordable for everyone. So we try really hard to keep the prices as low as we can because we'd rather sell higher quantities for a little bit less than make it exclusive and sell fewer things for more money.
That's great. Now, Cecilia, let's take a quick minute to thank some of our friends before we get on with the rest of the show.
Now close your eyes and repeat after me. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. But guess what, guys? You can still find a home away from home if you go to jovega.com. Jovega.com is a leading hotel booking platform with over 5,000 hotels across Nigeria. So Whether you're visiting friends or attending a special event, you can be rest assured knowing that you'll find a nice place to get a good night's rest. Go to jovega.com, that's JOVAGO.com, for more details. Looking to make secure and hassle-free transactions online? Want to take control of all your bills and be the master of your universe? Just Paga it. Paga is Nigeria's premier e-payment solution that makes it extremely easy to conclude transactions online. Whether it's paying your bills or online shopping, Paga has got you covered. Just Paga it. Go to mypaga.com, that's mypaga.com, for more details. Your cash, anytime, anywhere, Paga.
And I'm curious to know, what are some of the key business lessons that you've learned in the few short years you have started and run your business?
I feel like there's still a lot we You know, I think we learn little things all the time. Like, we learned a lot about our customer. We learned a lot about which, you know, styles work and which don't. And we focus a lot on our products. So we're constantly learning, you know, which kind of dresses sell better than others, which sizes are really popular. Because in the beginning, we would end up with stock in sizes that weren't particularly popular, and then we'd have a lot of stock left over. Now we kind of know which sizes sell more, so we try to make more of those sizes, less of the other ones. And you will never sell 100% of your stock, I don't think. That would be pretty amazing if you managed to, but we're trying to always learn what's selling and what's not, so that we don't keep, you know, running into having stock left over.
So what were some of the challenges you faced as a creative individual going into a business like this?
It means very challenging just to try and pay attention to all these things and worry about these things. I would rather just say, someone else, can you do it? I'm doing something else. So you always just have to, you know, remind yourself that it's really important. You have to focus on these things and really take it seriously. And you can't just let someone else do it. And you can't forget and just say, oh, I'm just going to do the fun stuff. You have to really just be very disciplined and say, let's really work on this.
All right, so let's switch gears a little bit and talk about you personally. So what were some of the obstacles that you faced in the early days? I mean, I know it's still early, it's only been 2 years, but what were some of the initial obstacles that you faced? Like, take for example, did you have to raise external money from investors to start your company or anything else like that?
We did, in the early stages, we received a grant from a charity, because we initially thought we would do also a project. We would train women. We worked together with this other woman we know who had a project training women who are HIV positive to sew so that they could then become employed. So in the beginning, we got funding to do that. We were hoping we would be able to train some of these ladies to then be our staff. But it was, you know, incredibly challenging. And a lot of these, the women that we were trying to train, didn't have any particular talents for sewing. And I wasn't even really sure they wanted to learn how to sew. And eventually, you know, because we were really trying to achieve high quality product, we had to say that this was not, it was not working for us. We were not going to achieve the right standard. So we did that for about a year, and it was incredibly challenging. And finally, we had to walk away and say, we can't actually make this profitable. And we don't want our business to be a charity. That's not what it's about. We really want to make it, you know, a real business, because I think there are, I mean, the staff we have now, they're incredibly talented and they're very motivated and they work really hard. So I don't want to employ someone just because that's, you know, an idea that we had, even though they're actually not going to produce well for us. I'd rather employ someone who is very talented and is working really well.
So you had a problem of getting the right fit for the business in terms of people that were interested in sewing and had the skill sets to match their interests, versus trying to train people that were, as it were, not particularly interested, but also needed like an economic reason for them to get a job with you guys.
Okay. Yeah, I think to have a charity was not the right fit for us. You know, it was, because it was essentially a charity to train women who didn't have any training. Mm-hmm. But for us, what we really need is, instead, you know, there are lots of people in Kenya who, as I said, are well trained, who also need the job just as much as someone who's not well trained. So we decided it was better to employ those women who were really well trained.
What's the most frustrating thing about being an entrepreneur from your perspective?
I think it's the fact that you're completely on your own. You don't have anything to fall back on. You don't have a salary, an employer, or someone that's behind you just taking care of everything. You're really, it's up to you, and you're completely on your own. You don't have any backup, which it can also, you know, it's one of the best things to be, but being an entrepreneur, but it can also leave you very vulnerable.
Okay. And so how do you manage the vulnerability and the stress of that, not having kind of a safety net to fall back on?
I think we just manage it by looking forward, just really pushing forward to make sure that we make our business stronger so that, you know, we can manage it and just not looking back so much, just looking forward.
Tell me a little bit about the dynamics of working with your family.
Most of the time, it's really good. You know, it's never easy to work with family, and tempers do run really high and emotions are a lot closer to the surface. So there's definitely, you know, we'll have a few fights here and there and, you know, this and that. But most of the time it works really well. And we, because it's such a personal business, we're all so invested in it. Okay. We do kind of come to common ground most of the time. And we are really helpful and really, you know, supportive of each other.
Tell me a little bit about a time where there was some major friction between two of you or three of you in the business, but you still had to resolve the issue and get things done.
A specific time, because that happens all the time.
Yeah, so, okay, a recent one, or one that sticks out the most in your mind.
Well, so sometimes my mother and I will Skype almost every day, and we'll discuss, you know, both just personal, how are you, how are you, and then we'll talk business stuff. And sometimes she'll Skype me when, you know, it's a Sunday afternoon and I'm not really ready to discuss what we should be cutting next week. And I'll tell her, like, but no, but Anne, I can't, I don't know. I'll have to, you know, we'll have to have a proper meeting about it, and I'll get a bit annoyed with her and say, why are you getting annoyed with me? It's just kind of like, then you have to just say, okay, I'm really sorry, but I Skype with you tomorrow morning, on Monday morning, when I'm prepared for this, and we'll have a proper discussion about what we're going
to
do.
So I just wanted to understand how you guys make it work from your perspectives.
You know, it's not easy, I wouldn't say, and there are definitely days that's easier than others. Mm. But at the end of the day, I don't think we would want it any other way.
Okay, that's good. So could you tell us a little bit about an entrepreneur you admire the most and why you admire such a person?
There's a family in Nairobi called the Ragus family. They've started several businesses in Nairobi. They started with a travel agency. They have a hotel, and they have a few other hotels around in the world, actually. They have several hotels. And they're just, they've accomplished so much. They've hired and trained so many people. They have a huge number of staff. And, you know, still to this day, they work together as a family.
What makes them so unique that they stick out at the back of your mind?
I think, in a sense, because it's, you know, they're doing, I mean, they're several decades ahead of us, but they're kind of doing what we hope to do. They have a really successful business. They're based in Kenya, and they all work together. Everyone in the family has a role to play. So for us, we look at it as kind of like, I hope that's us in 20 years.
So now let's switch gears a little bit and talk about some advice you'd give to young budding entrepreneurs that are thinking of starting like a business in the fashion industry. What's one of the key advice that you'd give such a person?
I would say to anyone who's starting a business that you really need to be qualified to do what it is you want to do. I don't know how we would navigate this business if I didn't myself know how to make clothes. You know, I wouldn't want to start a business and then have to hire staff to do all this specialized work. You wouldn't necessarily, you know if they were doing a good job. You wouldn't really be able to be in control, because you wouldn't be able to check, and you wouldn't be able to yourself say this is good or this is not good. So I think if you ever want to start a business, you need to yourself really know what you're doing. I sometimes wish I myself was an expert in business and accounting, because I have to hire someone to do my accounts. But I would say, you know, at least be an expert in something that you are venturing your business in.
Okay. And looking back, what advice would you give to yourself if you were just starting out based on your few years of experience running the business? What's the key thing you tell yourself to watch out for, to think about if you had to do it all over again?
I don't know. It's such a tough one. I mean, a lot of the mistakes we've learned are kind of, you know, they're made are kind of inevitable. A lot of things, before you even do them, you know, like, well, we don't know if this is a good idea or not, but the only way we'll find out is if we try. So there's a few ventures that we've gone out on, you know, we've sent stock to a shop and we've had to pay in advance commission to have our product stocked there. And we don't know if we're actually going to sell anything or not, but the only way we'll know is if we try. And then, of course, looking back, we didn't sell enough that it wasn't worth it for us. But you would never know that until after, you know, until you try. So I think, you know, if I were to tell myself something from a couple of years ago, just try to stay calm, just keep pushing forward, it's going to be okay.
Oh, okay. One of the last questions I'm going to ask you is, what are some of the books, software, you know, tapes or other inspirational materials that were valuable to you and maybe your family at the beginning of your journey that helped you guys develop as entrepreneurs?
I mean, the best help we've had along the way are just friends and contacts, and friends who introduce you to other contacts. Knowing people is the best resource you could ever have. And, you know, you'll get in somewhere or you'll get better help simply because you happen to know someone. And someone one day will tell you something that you didn't know, and all of a sudden you have so much more knowledge. So anyone that, you know, ever is willing to help, lend a hand, let you sleep in their guest room or introduce you to someone, that's, you know, the best resource you'll ever have.
Now let's do this from a different perspective. If I were to ask maybe your mom one of these questions that I just asked you, what do you think she would say?
Which question?
Okay, so advice. If you had to do it all over again, starting out, what do you think she would say?
Oh, gosh. My mother is kind of, she's our visionary. She's the one with all the big ideas, and we're kind of the ones who rein her in. Stay realistic. But, you know, we need that. She's always the one that's like, oh, we should make 200 dresses. And we're like, okay, let's make 50. But you need someone to kind of have these big ideas and to push you forward. And so, yeah.
Okay. And what about your sister? What would she say if I had to ask her what was a significant obstacle she faced in the early days of helping you guys to start and run this business and how she overcame it?
She will probably have lots of opinions about that. She's the reasonable one, and she's a bit further removed from the day-to-day activity, so it's easier for her to, you know, have all of these great ideas about what we should be doing, even though we're exhausted and don't have time to do them. But she would probably advise us to be a little bit more careful, and she would probably advise us to do all the right things, but of course you never know what the right things are once you're there.
We've reached the end of our show, so I just want to thank you, Cecilia, for coming on board and sharing your journey with us. It's really been a pleasure talking to you, getting to know about Njema Helena and the brand and your vision. So let's tell us a little bit about your vision for the future, actually, before we sign off.
We are hoping to just kind of grow and become a little bit stronger, become a little bit more stable, and have a few more kind of boutiques and stockers that stock us on a really regular basis. We're hoping to just get a few more customers. We have some really loyal customers. We're hoping to kind of spread that a little further and just become a really solid brand.
Great. Well, thanks for talking to us, Cecilia. It's really been a pleasure learning from you guys and sharing your story with the rest of the listeners out there. And I do wish you continued success as you continue to grow and run the business. And I look forward to chatting with you in the future. Maybe I'll see you in what, New York Fashion Week or something like that.
Maybe.
So.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
Don't let another minute go by without taking action to change your life. Visit Ordaishi.com right now for more incredible resources, and we'll see you next time on Ordaishi, the Bulletproof Entrepreneur.